going to read from the Bible. You have the words that I'm going to read in the order of service on the right-hand side of the order of service. It says I'm going to read from the verses 1 to 10 of 19, but I've decided I'm going to read, and I inserted the words on the right-hand side after I'd done the left-hand side and then didn't change the left-hand side. We're going to read from the 18th chapter, the 35th verse, through chapter 19, the first 10 verses. This is God's word. As he, that is Jesus, drew near to Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. And hearing a crowd going by, he inquired what this meant. They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." And he cried out, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." And those who were in front of him rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and commanded him to be brought to him. And he came near and he asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" He said, "Lord, let me recover my sight." And Jesus said to him, "Recover your sight. Your faith has made you well." And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise to God. He entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead, climbed into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And they saw it. And when they saw it, they all grumbled, "He's gone in to be the guest of a man who's a sinner." And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today, salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." May God bless to us this reading of his word. In the ninth verse of Luke's Gospel, chapter 19, we read the words of Jesus to this man, Zacchaeus. "Today salvation has come to this house, since he is also a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost." Jesus Christ comes to seek and to save the lost. This unfolding event takes place in Jericho. Jericho was an old historic city, but it also had a modern, vibrant air about it. It's described in the Old Testament as a city of palm trees. There were numerous springs in and around the city, which in a land that doesn't receive a great deal of rainwater, obviously meant it was very attractive for human habitation. It's reckoned, based on archaeological digs, that there were at least 20 successive settlements of various people groups in and around Jericho, spanning back for thousands of years. Some say right back to the earliest habitation of man himself. I'm sure you've heard of Mark Antony and Cleopatra. Well, Mark Antony gave Cleopatra, as a gift, the city of Jericho. And then she turned around and leased it out to King Herod, so I don't know what that said about her love for him. But Herod, during his reign, oversaw a lot of construction in the city. There was a hippodrome built. There was a theater erected. He built aqueducts to irrigate the winter gardens that he had built alongside his winter palace. In this city, there was a place of modern, vibrant activity. One of the historians of the time, Josephus, writes of it as being a little paradise. A little paradise. So whilst it was an old historic city, it had become modern. It had become the place to go to. It had become the place to be seen. It was on a prominent trading route, and people traveling to Jerusalem would pass through Jericho, and often they would stay in Jericho before they moved on to Jerusalem, because Jericho is about 20 miles from Jerusalem, and they would overnight camp or stay in a hostel or a boarding house or a hotel in Jericho before making their way up to Jerusalem. It was a happening place. Bustling metropolitan city. And on the day in which we enter the city through these events recorded for us in Luke's Gospel chapter 19, there's a heightened buzz on the streets. Someone very famous or notorious, depending on your view of him, is passing through. We tend not to see the level of drama that surrounded the coming of a person like Jesus Christ into a community. When Jesus entered a community or a city, he did so as one who was famously known. That was because his miracles had caused a real stir. The feeding of 5,000 people with very little food. The healing of people who were blind. Variety of illnesses. Raising people from the dead. People wanted to see this man. They had spoken of his teaching. We read a number of times in the New Testament how that people were amazed at his teaching. It wasn't just the fact that he was very engaging in his teaching. It was the fact that when he spoke, they said he spoke with authority. He demanded attention, not because of the manner and the demeanor of what he said, but because his words carried with them the authority as one who spoke as God. People wanted to hear. People traveled a long way to listen to Jesus Christ preach and teach. They wanted to see what he was doing. They wanted to hear what he was saying. They wanted to be part of what was going on. There was a great furore whenever Jesus Christ entered in a community. And the furore which preceded his entry into Jericho was heightened because of his giving of this blind man, Bartimaeus, his sight as he neared Jericho. And so there would have been people who had been going ahead of the assembled group of crowd of people, and they would have been entering Jericho, and they would have said, Jesus Christ is coming. And we've just seen and we've just heard of his healing of a blind man. He's working. He's changing people's lives. And people would have come out onto the streets to have seen this Jesus Christ. Everybody wanted to see him. Everyone wanted to hear him. And among the crowds thronging the streets on that day was this small man in stature named Zacchaeus. He too, like everybody else, wanted to see Jesus Christ. Little did this man know that on that day, not only would he see Jesus Christ, but Jesus Christ would see him. Not only would he seek out Jesus Christ, but Jesus Christ would seek him out. He had an intrigue in who Jesus was. But little did he know that that evening his life would be changed. Changed not just for the rest of his life, but for all eternity. What do we know about this man? Well, there are four things we know about him, besides the fact that he was a small man. We know his name, we know his profession, we know something of his character, and we know something about his personal wealth. We're told in the second verse that he was named Zacharias. And that word means just or righteousness. So this man's name conveyed the fact that he had been named as one who is just or one who is righteous. Which is an interesting aside given his profession and the arising reputation that he had from that profession. His mother and father had named him just. They had named him righteous. They had named him good. But as we shall see, this man was far from righteous. He was never just, and he certainly didn't carry the badge of being good. His profession. He was a chief tax collector. We read that in the second verse. At this time in the history of Palestine, it was a region that was under the rule of Rome. It was part of the global Roman Empire. Running an empire requires money, lots of money. And the Roman authorities had tax collecting measures and systems and ways that provided the money that they needed to run their empire. The Roman imperial provinces had tax collecting down to a fine art. There were a variety of both direct taxes and indirect taxes. In other words, there was tax which was taken off your income at source. And then there was taxes that were taken off the things that you bought, very much like our taxes today, like value-added tax, other taxes, customs taxes, levies on goods. And the indirect taxation, the levies on property, the levies on goods, the levies on products, that was gathered on behalf of the Roman authorities by tax collectors. What the Roman authorities would do is that they would sell off that the amount of tax that was to be gathered in a particular region to a tax collector. He would then go and gather the taxes in that region. He would gather the amount of money that he had paid for the taxes, and he would gather more, a percentage higher than that, for his time and effort. But there was no control over the percentage which he would gather on top of that which he was required to gather. The Roman authorities didn't care if a man gathered all that he had paid out to them, plus 10% more for his time and effort, 20%, 25%, 30%. The question was never asked. What were they adding on to the taxes that they were gathering? So you can well imagine that the people didn't take to the tax collectors too friendly. And the chief tax collector, there were three regions in Palestine which were divided into the subunits. There was Caesarea, there was Capernaum, and there was Jericho. And these were the three main centers of tax collecting through Palestine. And this man, Zacchaeus, was the chief tax collector in Jericho. And Jericho was a very, very lucrative place to be a tax collector, because the balsam trade passed through Jericho. And it was an extremely lucrative trade. And so if you have a percentage of a very lucrative trade, then you're going to make an awful lot of money. And so what Zacchaeus' job was, he oversaw the individual tax collectors who would go out and levy their taxes against the people, the indirect taxes. They would then filter those taxes through him back to the Roman authority. So he was getting a cut off the top of the cut that was being gathered by all the tax collectors. I think it's reasonable to say that Zacchaeus would have not been a man who would have been well liked in Jericho. He was a Jew, extorting money from Jews to maintain Roman rule over the Jewish nation. He wouldn't have been invited to too many birthday parties. He wouldn't have got too many invitations to retirement dinners. His character, he admits that he himself is a dishonest man. During his discussion with Jesus, we read that he says in verse 8, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." And when we read the word "if," we tend to see, is there an element of doubt there? But the word "if" there is not used in the sense of doubt. It's used in the sense of, since I have defrauded. He's confessing the fact that he has defrauded people, and many, many people. So his name, Just and Righteous, has not only been drawn through the mire by his trade, it has further been trampled upon by his own personal character, in which he has admittedly been dishonest in his dealings with people. And what of his personal wealth? Well, he was an incredibly wealthy man. An incredibly wealthy man. When he speaks with Jesus, we read that he says, "Half of my goods I give to the poor." And then he makes a statement, "I'm going to restore fourfold to all those whom I have defrauded." Now, the law required that if you confessed to taking other people's property by fraudulent means, then you had to give restitution according to the measure of what you've taken, plus a fifth on top of that. If you defrauded them of £100, you'd give them £100 back, plus £20 on top of that. The Roman authorities, they said, well, the Jewish law said if you didn't own up to it, you had to double the amount of money. So in other words, you had to give the £100 plus another £100. The Roman authority, which was extremely, extremely tight and difficult, said you had to treble it. So you had to give, you stole £100, then you had to give back £300. He says, I'm going to give fourfold back. He's going way, way, way beyond what's required of him. He could only do that if he had had a phenomenal amount of money. He was a man that was sitting on top of a mountain of money. that had been garnered through deceitful, extortionate means from ordinary people in Jericho and the region around it. In many ways, Zacchaeus had what many in our society would love to have: status, albeit a bruised status, power, influence, wealth, property. He had what many people strive for, what many people yearn to have. I want to have these things. If I had a position of responsibility and power, I'd be able to influence people. That's what many, many in our society want. If I had enough money that I didn't have any more cares in my life, I would be happy. I'd be satisfied. I would be content. It would take care of all the issues in my life. If I had people who looked up to me, whether they didn't like me or not, but if they looked up to me and my influence was such that I could impress upon them my importance, my status, then that would make me feel good, feel significant, feel as if I am somebody. Many people in our society today, vulnerable and weak, feel that I am nobody. Who am I? What have I got? I am nothing and I have nothing. If only I had that which others have, and I had enough of it, I would be happy and I would be content. I'd be satisfied. Jesus comes to Jericho. Zacchaeus wants to see Jesus. Is it a matter of just curiosity that brings him to see Jesus? Is it the fact that here is another very important man has come into his city and he wants to see this other important man? Or is there a deeper reason why he wants to see Jesus Christ? Is there something else in him that's leading him to seek out this miracle-working, powerful teaching man? How can we know that it is something else and not simply curiosity? Well, I think that it's evident from the fact that being unable to press his way through the crowd, he takes it upon himself to run ahead of the crowd and to climb a sycamore tree. What an embarrassing thing for this man to do. Here he is, albeit a fraudulent pillar of the society, picking up his clothes, as it were, girding up his loins, and running down the street. It would have been completely out of character for him to have done that. It would have been out with his professional capacity and status to do that. Men like Zacchaeus didn't break into a trot, let alone run down the street. They didn't need to break into a trot. People came to him. People listened to his call. People responded when he spoke. If he wanted someone to come to him, he sent out the word and that person came to him. There was no need or no time in Zacchaeus' life when he would have run after anyone or anything. But on this occasion, when Jesus Christ comes into Jericho with this huge crowd of people and everybody is flogging onto the streets and parents are holding up their children to see Jesus Christ, here we see this man Zacchaeus possibly being prevented from breaking through because the people say, well, let's keep him out. There he is, finding that he can't get access to the front of the crowd, onto the street to see Jesus. Why does he run down the street? He runs down the street because he wants to see Jesus Christ, because there's something in his life that he wants addressed. Yes, he has status. Yes, he has power. Yes, he has wealth. He has financial security. He has a home large enough to entertain guests. And yet, within him, there's a yearning for something more. There's an issue in his life, and he can't address it. He has a want in his life, a want which he can't satisfy. There's a void in his life that he can't fill. There's something in this man that causes him on this day to run down this street. Everybody looking at him. He is not put off by their stares or their glares. It's as though something is moving him to get to a position where he can see this man, Jesus Christ. There's something that's stirring in his heart. There's something that's giving him this desire. There's something that's moving his feet. It's as though he has been picked up emotionally and he has been brought to this large sycamore tree with its low-hanging branches and its full coverage of foliage. And there he climbs up onto the lower branches and he makes his way up into the tree and sits in the tree with all that foliage surrounding him. He's heard of this man before. And this man, Jesus, that he's heard of before, is unlike any of the other religious leaders, the teachers that he knows. He's different. The other religious leaders, the Pharisees and the scribes that Zacchaeus would have met in Jericho, they wouldn't have been interested in him. They wouldn't have cared for him. His profession would have cut him off. His reputation would certainly have separated them from him. They were good. He was bad. They were righteous, and although his name was righteous, they were never ever going to speak to him. And here on this day, this man Zacchaeus wants to meet or see this teacher of the law, whom he has heard will look at and speak with tax collectors and sinners. And so there he is, in the tree, waiting to see if Jesus passes by, waiting to hear if Jesus will say something that will affect his life, his thinking, his thoughts. And I want to ask you a very simple question this evening. Is that where you're at tonight with regard to Jesus Christ? You've heard about Christianity. You've heard other people talk about being converted, being saved, being born again, and it intrigues you. You want to know more about it. You know there's something in your life that isn't right. You know that there's a yearning deep within you that up to this point in your life you have not been able to satisfy. You may have tried a variety of ways of satisfying that want within you. I'm not going to speculate on how you've tried to fill that void. We've all tried it in different ways at different times. And the one thing that we all conclude is that we can't fill it. We can't fill it. Every one of us in this building this evening have tried at different times in our lives to fill that deep yearning in our hearts. We've tried to fill that want. We've tried to meet it. We've engaged in particular activities. We've done certain things. We've engaged in relationships. We've engaged with substances. It has given us pleasure for a period of time. It has brought a degree of happiness. But then we waken up. We waken up in the morning, or we waken up a week later, or waken up a month later, or a year later, or 5 years later, and that yearning is still there. It still will not be satisfied. And no matter what we try, no matter who we talk to, no matter who we speak with, that yearning is there. And as we go on, it seems to get deeper and deeper and deeper. It gnaws more and more at our souls. It eats at our minds. It yearns at our hearts. And we want to see Jesus. Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus. But you see, there was a problem. He wanted to see Jesus on Zacchaeus' terms. He wanted to look down on Jesus and look at Jesus and hear Jesus without being seen and without being heard. He wanted Jesus to impact or influence his life on Zacchaeus' terms. He wanted to receive Jesus in a way that meant that Zacchaeus could still be in control. He was a man who was used to being in control. He controlled the tax collectors in that region. And through the tax collectors, he controlled the populace. He controlled the spending habits of the people. He influenced what people had and what they didn't have, because he would determine the tax levies that would be placed on particular goods. He could actually influence the level of trade that was going through Jericho by his tax-raising powers. He was a small man, but he had a sense of great importance. He was a small man, but yet he had this desire to be in control. And here he was, desperately wanting to see Jesus, desperately wanting to have a contact with Jesus, but on his terms. But God doesn't work that way. God deals with us personally, but he doesn't deal with us on our terms. God always deals with us on his terms, because his ways are perfect and our ways are not. His ways are true and our ways come out of a deceitful heart. And so whilst this man wants to see Jesus, it's not going to happen on his terms. It's going to happen on God's terms. Jesus stops at this tree. Did anybody see Zacchaeus get into the tree? They'd probably seen him running down the street, but when they saw them running down the street, their eyes would then have turned back to Jesus, who was coming up the street in the other direction. Who would have known that Zacchaeus was in the tree? Nobody knew that Zacchaeus was in the tree. Nobody knew. And Jesus stops at the foot of the tree. He looks up into the tree and he calls Zacchaeus by name, a man he has never met before. Zacchaeus, hurry and come down. He speaks to him by name. People are probably standing there thinking, what is he doing? Why is he standing looking into this tree calling Zacchaeus? We saw Zacchaeus run down the street a few moments ago. But you see, Jesus sees where Zacchaeus is. Not because Jesus has seen Zacchaeus climb the tree ahead of everybody else, but because Jesus knows, because Jesus sees who we are and where we are at. He calls this man by name. My desire tonight and my prayer tonight is that Jesus will call you tonight by name. There are many in this building who have heard that call themselves. People who are sitting in the pew that you're sitting in tonight. They have come to this church. They had a problem in their life, a problem they couldn't address. There was a want in their life, a want they couldn't satisfy. There was a void in their life, a void they couldn't fill. And they came, maybe like you, saying, I'll go along and hear about Jesus, but I'll do it on my terms. I'll control the scenario. I'll take charge of the situation. I'll hear what he has to say about Jesus Christ, and then I'll go away and wait up. Well, my friend, tonight, if Jesus Christ has come here tonight before you were ever here, and Jesus Christ is speaking to you at this moment as he spoke into that tree to Zacchaeus, then hear his voice. He is before you. He sees you. He hears you. He has searched you out. He knows your heart. He knows your thoughts. He knows your desires. He knows what you're seeking for. And God in his providence has brought you here tonight. You thought you were coming because someone asked you. You are here tonight because God ordained that person would ask you. For before the foundation of the world, God decreed that you would be in this building tonight, that Jesus Christ would meet you in the eye tonight, and he would look you in the eye, and he would speak to you personally. Jesus Christ would speak to you personally. He would call you by name. Not my voice calling you by name, but Jesus Christ calling you by name. And you want to control it, and you want to measure it, and you want to have full responsibility for all that's going on. But you see, when God comes in the power of the Spirit, and he speaks to you in Jesus Christ, he calls you to submit yourself and humble yourself to him, to come down off that platform that you're on, where you are living, and saying, I will live my life my way, even with this yearning in it. He's asking you to climb down off that pedestal of your life. He's asking you to step down off that pedestal and submit yourself by confession and faith to believe in him. It's a God-ordained meeting. Isn't that an amazing thought? That this wee man thought he was climbing that tree to see Jesus. And before the foundation of the world, God had decreed that Jesus would be passing through Jericho on that day. And Jesus would stop at that tree. And Jesus would look up into that tree with all the crowd looking at Jesus, thinking to himself, what is he going to do? And he says, Zacchaeus, come down. I'm going to stay at your house tonight. I wonder how many people were there thinking, I wonder where he'll stay tonight. He's not going to surely go on to Jericho or Jerusalem. He's not going to make Jerusalem this evening. I think if you were a betting man in Jericho that day and you heard that Jesus was coming into Jericho and someone was wanting to lay you a nod, and I'm not advocating betting, all right? A nod on the fact that Jesus would end up spending the night with Zacchaeus, I think that you would have got, this shows I'm not a betting man, I'm not sure whether it was long odds or short odds. It wouldn't have happened. But God decreed it would happen. And that man came down. And that man, and his life was changed forever. And that man says, I love you. And that love was manifest through the disposal of his wealth. dispose of his wealth didn't merit the change in his life. It was the call of Jesus that justified and brought the change in his life. And once that change took place, the evidence of that change by Jesus Christ upon this man, that was manifest by this man's decision to dispose of his wealth in this way. He was demonstrating his trust in God and in the person of Jesus Christ. It was real. And if God comes to you this evening, you who yearn to have that want in your life filled, you who have tried A.N. and everything else to fill that gap, if Jesus comes to you tonight and he names you and he speaks to you and he calls you and he says to you, come, come to me, step down from ruling and governing your own life. Step down from living to please and satisfy yourself because you know that you're not getting it. Come and confess the reality of who you are. Come and trust in me. Believe in me. Walk with me. I can and I will change your life, not just for today or tomorrow, not the fact that tomorrow you will waken up and it will be different. I can remember well the night I was at a mission as an 11-year-old boy, coming home on a Thursday night. And I remember walking up the street with my father. Took my hand, quite embarrassing, I thought. You know, my father hadn't held my hand probably since I was knee-high to a daisy, but he took my hand that night. Subsequently found out my father had been praying for me every night at the prayer meeting prior to the mission that I'd be saved. And he looked into my eyes and I looked at him, and he's a big man, and I was a small boy at that stage, and he says, son, your life has been changed forever. Forever. And he says, for eternity it's been changed. That's all he said. It was a man of few words, still a man of few words. But I've never ever forgotten those words. Your life, son, has been changed forever and for eternity. And when Jesus Christ comes to you and he speaks to you, and he speaks to you in person, it's not Jesus Christ coming to you by accident. It's not somehow you've just stumbled in here and suddenly this is all new and all exciting and you're being carried along in a wave of emotion. It's not about emotion. It's not about emotionalism. It's about the fact that God comes in His Spirit and He speaks to us and He calls us with an authority that comes from heaven. He speaks to us with a power in the voice of Him who created the heavens and the earth. And that power and that authority is carried in the effectual calling of Jesus Christ. And He calls upon you tonight to flee from that life of yours in which you are no longer satisfied and happy. And He calls you to come and walk with Him. And when you do so, you see, the impact is not only in you. It's upon your household. For Jesus says, today salvation has come to this house. Salvation has come to this house. And I know that there's a number of you in this building tonight and you're disappointed tonight. Because you've been praying. You've been praying that that son or that daughter, that husband or that wife would come. And they would come and sit beside you to hear the power of the gospel in Jesus Christ. And they're not here. They said they're going to come some night, but you in your heart of heart knows they're not going to come any night. It's heartbreaking. Because He's changed your life and you want them to sense it. You want them to experience the same thing. Do not give up. Do not give up. Do not give up praying for them. Do not give up encouraging them. Don't nag them, but don't give up. Pray incessantly to your Father in heaven that He has chosen a day, that He has foreordained, when Jesus will come to them in the power of the Spirit, and He will call them by name. That day may be after you have died. That day may be long in the future. But you pray that that day exists in the heart of God. You take courage tonight from what Jesus says to Zacchaeus. Today salvation has come to this house. God comes, not just to save individuals, but He works in families. And if Jesus was to come tonight and speak to you and bring you from death to life, He will work. He will work in those whom you love. He will work in those whom you love because He has loved you. What a prospect. What a glorious, glorious prospect. This salvation is not just for me as an individual. This salvation is a salvation that comes to those whom I love. This salvation comes in the person of the Lord Jesus Christ. This salvation is real. This salvation is foreordained by God. This salvation will take place. You lay your hope in that truth. You lay your trust in that promise. And you seek the Lord with all your heart. Do not allow the devil to come in and say, "It's time you give up. It's time you give up. What's the point?" You nicely, or if you don't want to do it nicely, you don't have to do it nicely, tell him where to go. You tell him, "No, Christ called me by name. Christ has come into my family. And I'm going to pray that Christ will work through my family. That He will change and bring life to those whom I know and love. For His glory. Amen."